The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for that, Ryan. It's Donna Marie in here for Greg Hughes today as he's down, hopefully picking up a bit of gold wire for us here. We'll hear very shortly, hopefully, and you'll definitely know at least by this afternoon on the socials. We'll kick off with the papers and we'll start things locally. We'll start here with the Tyrconnell Tribune. And on the front cover, it says 35,000 farmers are going to be left off worse in the EU. And this is down to the CAP scheme. Now, the CAP scheme, there's a lot of criticism of it. You know, over the news, we see things coming in quite regularly. But this is in relation to restrictions that have been placed on farmers because their land has been placed as areas of protection. So, Fiona Molloy, the national president of the INHFA, said that the new CAP share funding must address anomalies that were created 30 years ago. And it's when designations imposed by the EU framework had a negative impact on more than 500,000 acres of farming land. The restrictions have left them with substantial loss. So, applicants who are looking for planning permission in these locations have complained that there's real complexities in the regulations. They're really struggling to have to go through all of the nature impact assessments and the likes. And of course, those are important. But whenever your farmland is listed as a protected area, that's obviously going to make it quite hard to work, to develop on. So the IFA has advocated for a no compensation, no designation policy. So essentially they're saying, yes, if we need to protect this land, we will, but we need to make sure that we're fairly rewarded for it. The EU Natura 2000, this is the regulations in which they have been sort of stuck in. And, you know, we do hear very often, I had done Ours to Protect, which some of you may have heard, it's all about sustainability. It was a program that ran over the course of 2 years. And regularly what I have come across in that is that farmers, generally speaking, are great stewards of the land. They need the land to survive. They know that and they've been taking care of it for centuries. But it's becoming increasingly difficult under the regulations in which they need to operate within, and they just want to be compensated for that so that they can continue doing what it is they need to do. And actually, there's a little bit further more that we'll hear about just on that. It's coming up in the Farmers Journal. It's the thing that Midlands Northwest MEP Maria Walsh has. So we'll reference that shortly. Going now to the Donegal News. This one is not necessarily a local story, but it will affect nearly every household here in Donegal, and that's students being urged to stay calm and carry on. We're entering into the second week now of the state examinations, being the junior cert and the leaving cert. And this is the point, folks, where you need to be getting your young people to make sure that they're not eating like crap, make sure that they're getting their sleep, because it's kind of go time. This is kind of where things can, the late night studying or even the worry will keep them awake. They won't be sleeping right. And, you know, at this point, there may have been a few exams that just didn't go quite the way that they wanted to. So a record number of junior cert and leaving cert students across Donegal are sitting at the hardest exams that they've ever had to face. And it's saying that teachers and principals have issued sound tips to try and get them through the testing period. And it's the ones that we all know. And it's getting your sleep. And it's getting making sure that you're eating well. Having time to unwind is also quite important. I know going out for your walks and all the weather's kind of but get out for a wee walk. And you know what? I'm being such a hypocrite here. I absolutely despised whenever my mummy says, right, get up and go for a walk now. And I'm like, do you not understand? I have so many things to study for. I don't have time to be going out for a dander. But it's important to do that. St. Eunan's College Principal Damien McCrory here says that they talk to students before their exams, making sure they're okay, encouraging them to read the questions properly. That's another one. And I was chatting to my nephew, actually. He was doing his leaving cert, and it was something that he hadn't heard, which surprised me. Now, whenever I was in doing my exams, the recommendation was read the entire paper first before you put pen to paper. So for the first 10 minutes or so of your exam, you actually won't write anything. Read everything. And then what I used to do was I did the paper in an order that suited me. Especially, I know the likes of history, it can be very hard to get everything done in time. So you can pick the questions that suit you best. You don't have to do the paper in the order that it's set. So if you, one of the questions near the end, you know that you know that that's what you're going to do. Do that first. Of course, they're probably in their exams. They might be on their way to the exams now. If you are, good luck. If you have a young person who's not with you right now, but they are doing the exams, make sure to say that for them, that they don't necessarily have to do the paper in the order. If there's a question near the end that suits them, start with that, build your confidence, and just knuckle down and get the rest done. And you're nearly there. They say you'll have the bulk of the exams now, and then there'll probably be a wee break. The likes of music, and I know some of the lesser done languages like Italian now, they might be towards the end more of the month, but you're nearly there, just keep going. Okay, we'll go now to the Dairy News, and there's a call here for holiday homeowners to be included in the Donegal Defective Concrete Blocks public inquiry. Now, this is Councillor Frank McBrearty. We had done a piece with him and on his thoughts on the IS 465 standard, and he believes that it should never have been brought into the first place. You can catch the full interview I did with him there, and the written piece on that on our website. But there's a bit in here where he's saying that it's known that there's widespread deterioration in homes in Derry and Tyrone, and it's as a result of the use of defective concrete that was got in Donegal. So he's saying that it's time that our, from what I understand here, that the public inquiry should also include those. Not entirely sure how that would then operate across border, but it is like so many of the issues that we come into the likes of here in Donegal, and that is that the border doesn't necessarily exist for many things in terms of nature, economy, you know, which kind of, there's a lot of overlap there. Now we'll go on to the Irish Times, and of course the front page of all the national papers is the disruption and the disorder that's been seen in Belfast and in Derry as well overnight. And the Irish Times is the PSNI use water cannons against Belfast anti-immigration rioters. And it says here that the cannon was deployed by the PSNI yesterday to maintain public order in a second night of anti-immigration rioting in Belfast. Masked protesters hurled bricks and missiles at police and the Sandino's roundabout in Newton Abbey. On the outskirts of the city were more than 200 people gathered before 8 o'clock. It's been a lot to take in and a lot to see over the social media. Everything that's been happening, we're going to have extensive talks about that today on the show. Calls for calm. Other people will be talking about their own experiences of that. But another thing I would like to get to on this is that the Parnell Square. So this is actually it's. Do you remember the riots in Dublin? This is the incident that I believe set them off. It was where the little girl was injured severely. Where did I have this? That court case is going underway, though her mother has testified, and she has said, you know, she spoke about the little girl's injuries, that she can only really communicate by blinking, that she can't do anything for herself now. She also has dystonia, so essentially her brain is working against her body. If she wanted to put her arm out, everything in her body is telling her to put her arm in. I don't think she's not able to speak anymore. She can't go to the bathroom herself. That testimony is ongoing. So it's just interesting that case is now being brought up, and at a time where there is more riots. Some people will argue and say that that's why the riots are needed, or that's why the protests are needed. Others will say that, you know, it's not the time or place. And we've actually heard that from the family of the man who was injured in the attack in Belfast, that the riots are not reflecting their beliefs. Okay, moving on to the Irish Independent. This one's interesting. A woman's challenged refusal to become a trainee Garda, and the reason she was given was called her sphere of influence. So, a young woman's been granted permission by the High Court to challenge the refusal of her application to become a member of An Garda Síochána Síochána. So she's seeking to quash a decision that was made in February of last year. She's in her early 20s, and the reason this sphere of influence, what she believes is is the reason why, is that she has, I suppose, technically failed her vetting. But the reason she's failed her vetting is because it included an admission that her father's cousin has criminal convictions. And this young woman says that she has minimal contact with her father as it is, and that side of the family she doesn't speak to at all. And she's saying it's not fair that, you know, if this is why that she's being refused, that shouldn't be allowed to stand. But what's interesting is that despite her requests, the concerns about her sphere of influence can't be released due to GDPR implications. So despite the fact that this is her dream job and it's something that she wants to do because of GDPR, she's not allowed to know the reason why, though she believes it's heavily suspected that it's to do with her father's cousin having criminal convictions. I even think in families that are close enough, I don't know if, you know, you'd be friendly or know that much about your family's cousins. Maybe that's just saying more about my family. But anyway, okay, on to the Farmers Journal. There's two cases. The one I was on about Maria Walsh, we'll come to that. But first, there's a carcass collection facility in Raphoe which has gotten over planning. So this facility would allow farmers to transfer carcasses for collection at a site that would take them then to Sligo Regional Veterinary Laboratory. So it's, I suppose, for like the likes of autopsies and the likes of that there. It is under conditions, though. So the site would be permitted to operate on an appointment-only basis between the hours of 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. between Monday and Friday, and it will remain closed on the weekends and public holidays to protect the amenity of the area, because I suppose the idea of what that building would be used for is generally not a nice thing to think about. But again, I feel like that will probably take a lot of pressure off farmers if they're having to find other ways to transport them to Sligo if they're needed. And the other part I wanted to speak about, we were talking earlier about the struggles of farmers. Midlands Northwest MEP Maria Walsh wants the European Commission and member states to ring fence at least 10% of the CAP budget. So that's, again, that's the common agricultural policy for young farmers exclusively. So in average, the age of a farmer in Ireland is 58 years old, and 7% of farmers are under 35. So between 2010 and 2023, the number of farmers below the age of 35 fell by 47%. So they aged out of that bracket. And there's a lot of young people trying to get into farming. And the argument is that they're facing too many expenses. It's very difficult to get into. Again, we talked about it's very heavily regulated. Yes, it should be. It's important that it's safe and that things are done in the way that they're meant to be done. But it's coming at the cost now of people are not able to sort of crack their way into the industry. The Irish Daily Mail, this was, I knew I had a paper that had this on it. So this has extensive coverage of the court case of the little girl who was stabbed in the school attack, and it has a large part of the mother's testimony in this. So the mum described the moment that she got the call from the creche, and she said she was lucky enough to be passing her desk whenever she saw the phone ringing, so she picked it up, and that the creche owner was crying, saying, oh my God, your daughter's been stabbed, you need to come. And she got to the creche, or she said then, where did it happen? I thought she was at school, and that's whenever the revelation happened, that it happened at the school or at the front of the school. She said whenever she got there that there was emergency personnel working on her, and she stood back and she let them do what they had to do, which was a very, you know, a very level-headed thing to do. You know, you always wonder in times of crisis, how will you act? But she stood back and let the people work on her. And she said that she could see her pink backpack and her pink shoes. And that she stood back and let them work on her. And then she went on to say that her brain was without oxygenation for about 40 minutes. So it's left her child severely brain damaged. We mentioned there that she has dystonia that causes her muscles to do the absolute opposite of what we want them to do. So she said that she wanted to move her hand out, the muscles will actually do the opposite, so it will take it in. She can't go to the toilet by herself. She can't convince her to fall asleep. And that they need to now medicate the daughter to try and get her to go to sleep. And that if she gets too excited, she has to be sedated. So that's that child's life. You know, she was a regular little girl who had gone to school, and this horrific crime then happened. There's also the testimony from other parents who were there that day as well. And one father describes a cut that was on his son's chest. Going to the Sun, and there's a warning here about financial abuse. And it's happening more and more frequently, and it's happening to vulnerable people. And that they have out their the financial the Safeguard in Ireland. I couldn't find the name of that there. Safeguard in Ireland have released tips now for people to be aware of cash and grabs on the rise. And they say that it can start quickly. It can start with maybe a family member, a carer or a friend just hanging on to a fiver to buy something for themselves. The next time it might be a tenner, and so on and so forth that it can start like that there. So their top tips is that your money should only be used for your needs, to organise your financial information and to get help or advice from a financial provider. You can explore online banking and adapt your needs as they change. We have an ad run in here as well from Safeguard Ireland about your financial safety. So it's just wee things to be aware of. And if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not. And you're not going to be putting anybody out by just asking a question, or if you feel that something's not quite right. So never be afraid to do that. And again, if somebody who's caring for you or a family member is truly there for your behalf, they will not be put out. They'll be happy that you had reached out and said something and asked for help. And the last one here now we want to go to is from the Irish Daily Mirror. And I thought it was interesting. It's sort of related with in terms of scams and frauds, but it's with the Senior Football Championship coming up, and I suppose the World Cup too. And it was that a man got scammed because he was scrolling TikTok and he saw a sale for O'Neill's GAA, and that there was jerseys for €15 and shorts for €5, and how could he pass it up? And he was so caught in the excitement of it that he spent €63, and his wife said, "Are you sure that's right?" And he was like, "Yeah, no, this is it, this is it." And it wasn't until he got the email seeing that was riddled with spelling mistakes that he was in fact scammed. And O'Neill's put out just an advisory, and they're saying that they don't sell products via TikTok or any other social media marketplaces. All official O'Neill's products are sold through their official website and authorised retail locations. So you might see O'Neill's posting their ad, but it will be a link to their website. And if you do see a sale, generally a good bit of advice is if you see a sale and you aren't sure if it's from O'Neill's or not, go to the O'Neill's website independently. Don't go through that link. And if the sale is on, they'll have it well advertised on their website, and it's the same kind of goes for across the board. Right, it's just coming to 9:20. We will take a quick break and we'll be back with our first guest. It is just gone 9:24 this Thursday morning. Now, I am joined by Gillian Devereaux, a senior loss adjuster at Aviva Insurance Ireland DAC. Gillian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, Dan-Anne. How are you?
I am good. So I am now. We're here to talk today about research that's shown 2 in 5 people would consider reducing insurance as household costs rise. I suppose whenever it comes down to it, if you're going to be caught between heating your house or trying to cover it, it's probably going to go to the heating. So what did you find in the research that you did?
Yeah, so this is something within the claim side of the business that we see every single day. And when we see trends, we try to look at the overall market and gauge what's happening. So in this particular survey, we found that under insurance or average, two terms that can be used, is a widespread issue within Ireland. And with the Aviva data indicating that over 70% of home insurance claims involve some level of underinsurance. So that's impacting our policyholders at the point of payment. Average underinsurance won't ever impact you until you make a claim.
It won't. How can you tell, or how would you go about making sure that your house isn't underinsured? I feel like whenever we go into this kind of space, a lot of people just, you know, they don't know. They just try and get it done and forget about it then until the next time it needs to be done.
Absolutely. And I totally appreciate that. And probably the stats show that only 39, we say 40% people have reviewed their sums insured recently. So that means there's a large cohort of people out there that haven't. There's probably one direction that I would point people in. If you did one thing today or in the next 12 months, was to look at the SCSI website. So that's the charter.
Oh, we've lost you there, Gillian. Sorry, what website was that?
Oh, sorry. So that is the Chartered Institute of Surveyors Ireland website, the SCSI website. And all you need to do in that is there is a formula there. You tell them if you live in a terrace property, a semi-detached property, and you provide the floor area, maybe if you have a garage, and it will give you a figure in respect of the reinstatement of the property. So if that's all you ever did today, you have probably done the most valuable thing in relation to reviewing your sums insured. So as I say, it's the SCSI website. Have a look at it. It's a really simple task to complete, and I would highly recommend it. And what that does is it gives you the estimated rebuild value of your property. And if you think about it, an insurance policy doesn't insure, we say, the sale value of the property. Because if anything happens to your house, the insurance company isn't looking to sell it. They're looking to rebuild it or reinstate it. So that's the cost that the value that you're placing on your insurance policy.
So see, if a house was built, say, 20 years ago, obviously the price of building that house will have gone up. Is that market dependent? If that's become more of a hotspot to build a house, will that put the value up?
Yeah. So the value does depend on where you live. So actually, sorry, I should have said on the SCSI website, it will say, do you live in Dublin or do you live in Cork, et cetera, et cetera. But largely across the country, reinstatement rates and rebuilding rates have gone up. They do go up in to different amounts, but overall, probably if in the last 5 years you haven't reviewed your building sum insured, it's more than likely probably not adequate. Now, insurance companies do also what they call index linking. And that means that at each renewal, if they know inflation within the rebuild market is 5%, then they will add that 5% onto your building sum insured. So that is a protection for policyholders, but that's not always guaranteed. Mm. And you probably need to double check that as well.
What would happen in the case that it is underinsured? What kind of bills could people be looking at?
Yeah, so I'll give a really simple example. Just say, for example, your house is insured for €200,000 and you have a claim for, we say, €50,000, which is obviously quite significant money. And you realise at that point, actually, the house is underinsured and it should have been insured for €400,000. So you're essentially 50% underinsured, which means that you only receive 50% of that settlement value of that €50,000. So, i.e., you're receiving only €25,000. And that can have major impacts on people when a claim occurs, because more than likely it's an unexpected event. It's the very basis of insurance. It's not something that you've planned for. And then, yes, whilst you're getting 50% of the settlement from your insurance company, you're essentially having to make up the balance.
We have a question in here saying, if I install solar panels on the roof, is there an issue with the battery being inside your home? Will that be covered or not?
No, that is covered. Yeah, that's and actually that's probably a common question, because we are seeing more fires, not necessarily due to the solar panels itself. Mm-hmm. It's more associated with the wiring and then obviously the battery, which is generally located within the property. But from an insurance point of view, that isn't an issue. From an average point of view or an under insurance point of view, it's probably a good segue to say, if you've installed solar panels or if you've undertaken renovation works, etc., that's a really good point at which to review your sum insured, because you imagine you're increasing the value of of the home, or you're increasing the value or the cost of reinstating the home.
We have another question here saying, morning Highland, can you ask your guest about cracks appearing on your house because of defective blocks? It's not tested yet. Will insurance cover if something happens another part of the home?
Okay, again, interesting question. So if it's defective block work, it's generally what we would see would be pyrite and mica, and your listeners will know only too well about that. I would say get it tested. It could also be subsidence, and subsidence being generally where there's an issue, there might be a leak under the foundations causing the soil to wash out and weakening the foundations. So it's really important that you get that tested and looked at. From an insurance point of view, insurance policies as a whole generally don't cover defective works, defective workmanship and defective materials. But that individual doesn't know that until they test it. I would say pick up the phone to your insurance company, talk to them. They'll more than likely register a claim for you, and you know they'll probably send someone out as well to have a look at it.
In terms of what causes claims or what you would see for reason for claims, is there any sort of repeat offenders?
Last year was particularly eventful year for insurers, where we had Storm Eowyn, which occurred in January of 2025. So that was our most common event last year. Generally speaking, escape of water is probably the most common event that you have throughout the life cycle of policies that we would see. The most catastrophic event would probably be fire. So in fire damage claims generally have the ability to cause extensive damage to properties. But it really, really varies. Subsidence, theft, escape of oil claims, you name it, we see it every single day.
And I suppose just finally, Gillian, for people who do want to check that they what they're insuring their house for, I know you said there's an online option. Is there anywhere they can ring if online's not their thing?
Yeah, they can potentially talk to their local auctioneer who can advise them. Their bank as well may also have some expertise in that area. But look, any online inquiries, they can always talk to their insurance company as well. We do find that sometimes people take a calculated risk in underinsuring their property, and that's no issue as long as you're informed in doing that. But we're always surprised, I think, to say, okay, if I increase my sum insured by €50,000, it generally won't impact your premium majorly. So just make that informed decision.
Actually, just before I let you go, it says, it states on their website that the valuation is for estate houses, and people in rural Ireland should get a separate valuation. Could she discuss this, as people are not pricing their homes at the value of building it today?
Yeah, so generally speaking, it is estate type houses, but it will give you very good reflection overall for one-off house as well. If you're building a house in the country, it may be by direct labour, so the cost can vary a little bit, but insurance companies allow a buffer as well. So we don't expect you to have the exact figure. Once you're within, we say 10-15%, then average isn't applied.
Okay, Gillian Devereux, Senior Loss Adjuster at Viva Insurance Ireland. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Hi, this is the Greg Hughes Show with Donna Marie Geordie. I have a comment in here I just want to address here. I'm not too sure if it was me or Greg that said this. I think it might have been me doing the papers. Who termed the word kids for children? They're children, not goats. Call them by what they are. And that's in from Anna in Moville. So Anna, my apologies. If indeed that was myself. Now, I'm joined by John Hegarty of Sean Hegarty College in Remelton. Good morning, John. Can you hear us all right there?
Good morning, Donna Marie.
How are you keeping? Now, I saw a very interesting photo this morning, and it was of a fire engine and two cars, and it just fitting the width of the new road there at the hospital. John, you have concerns coming from a haulage company about that.
That's correct. We contacted the council 3 weeks ago about the width of the road there, but as to date, we have no response back from them. It's just trucks, driving trucks and large vehicles and going around there with the trees and all on the park side, and that for two vehicles meeting, like, it's going to be very, very tight. There's going to be no room for moving there at all.
There's concerns there, particularly about emergency vehicles. Look, we've had the conversation about the four-lane road. People have seen so many times ambulances getting stuck there. Now, given how close this road is to the hospital, that's particularly frightening.
It definitely is, and there's going to be nowhere to go for an ambulance or an emergency vehicle or a fire brigade. The fire station's beside it there as well. There's going to be nowhere. If two trucks are meeting there, there's nowhere for the trucks to go. It's just the cycle lane there, the way I see it, they're the same all around Dublin and that there, and they are that width. I don't believe there's any reason for them to be so wide. Their cyclists use them, but there would be nowhere near the amount of cyclists that would be in Dublin, Galway, Limerick, Cork, all them cities. There wouldn't be near that amount of cyclists in Donegal or Letterkenny around the area, and they're making these that wide and like rural areas. It's the same everywhere, like even Letterkenny round Ballyrean, the one there, it's the same width as it is in Dublin, and the amount of cyclists that would be using it in Dublin compared to Letterkenny, I don't think there's any reason for it to be so wide.
John, how long have you been in Holledge?
Oh, we've been in Holledge a long time. I'm driving myself roughly 30 years.
And how has it been, maybe from whenever you started to now, trying to navigate Letterkenny?
Well, Letterkenny, it's getting harder to navigate. Even the four lanes coming in there, there are trees, the planted trees in the middle of the road there. If you're coming in there now and two trucks wide there, your mirrors hitting off the trees. It just seems there's no thought put into this at all by councils or that. Like, and my own perspective, I just think there's a pot of money there left from when the Greens were in government. They put in all these greenways and do all this, but they have to look at the situation in Dublin. A lot of it's along the side of motorways and that there, and there's new roads and that there, and they can make these wider. I just can't understand why they have to make them so wide and leave it so narrow for trucks and buses and larger vehicles. Like even Donegal being rural, there are a lot of tractors and dump trailers and that use that road as well, like a lot of wider vehicles.
Yeah, it's going to be a different type of traffic altogether. Suppose in the event that there's two lorries and an ambulance or a fire engine trying to get by, I know in the four lane, the part of the big problem is the fact that there's the sort of the concrete rise in the middle of the road where the trees are. Is there anywhere that the trucks could go up? I know then you're sort of going into the territory of trying to get up on footpaths and on a tall vehicle like that there, that's definitely not ideal.
You can go up on footpaths there, but a lot of them seem to be doing now. They're putting up the concrete footpath and they're making it that high. It's nearly a foot high, like, so you'd pick off a bumper spoiler or something like that trying to go up on the footpath.
Well, John, thank you very much for ringing in to us. I'm sure that we're going to have more comments in relation to it. That's John Hegarty there of Sean Hegarty Holledge in Remelton. The text line's 08660 25000 if you want to get in touch, or you can give Caroline a call there on 074 91 25000. I have some comments here to get to, and that is in relation to some of the topics that were discussed yesterday. So we have one here, and it's in relation to the abuse case that we heard. It's the case of Bill Keneally. He was a Garda in Waterford. The Garda in Tenerife facilitated John McLean abuse to industrial levens of children in Terenure College. Bill Keneally and John McLean were facilitated by Garda across the country to abuse children. How many children are Garda currently setting up to be abused by child sex predators in Donegal and across Ireland today? And that comes in from Tony, who is from Terenure there. So it is. And you know, that obviously it's a very, very serious crime there, but that's also a very serious question that Tony's asking. So it is. A bit about sports goes, there's history to finding out that Paddy Doherty was the last Irishman to play in Croker. So this is in, Paddy fought in Croke Park. So he did, didn't fight Muhammad Ali, but was in the same fight. So Katie and the Ireland team live to fight on another day. But the World Cup will either be remembered for the farce or for the football. I see Czechia has their game at 3:30 a.m. and Scotland have their game at 1:30 on Sunday. But there's too many games, I can't watch them all. I wonder if we have the day off like Scotland the next day. It's from Kevin in Dunlow. Kevin, I don't know. I think whenever Ireland's not in it, I don't know if we're going to be able to pull one like that there to get a day off. So it is. There's plans to publish a book next year about Father Paddy O'Kane, who died in 2022, who served in Melmount Parish from 1982 to 1990. The author of the book, Kieran O'Neill, is keen to hear about anyone who'd like to share their memories about Father Paddy during his years in Strabane. So anyone who would like to get in touch with Kieran can contact him at C-A O'Neill, so it's C-A for Kieran, then O'Neill, O-E-N-I-E-L-L, 1971@gmail.com or an 078-759-4354. And we'll take one more just before we go on, just to our next ad break, and that is in relation to the EU Pact. We keep glossing over the problem. There's too many dogs allowed in our country, and if this migration packs go through, it'll become even a bigger dumping ground for people that don't deserve to breathe the same air as somebody else. Stop glossing over the problem. We will be joined by Bishop Donal McEwan just after the break, and kind of tie in with that, where we're talking about the riots that are ongoing, and it would be probably a lot of people who'd hold a similar view there to that commenter. Well, it's going to be a dull and wet Thursday morning with widespread rain from early this morning, and the rain will become quite patchy, but it will stay quite dull and damp and rather breezy for most of the day. Quite humid too, with temperatures of 14 to 18 degrees. Now, we have been inundated with images and videos coming from Belfast, also now from Derry last night, and it's in relation to violence and disorder, which started off as protests over the attacks that we've seen on a man on Monday night in Belfast. I'm joined on the line by Bishop Donal McEwan, the Chair of the Council for the Catholic Maintained Schools. Good morning, Bishop. How are you?
Morning from Derry.
Bishop, it's always good to speak, but unfortunately not on the terms that we are today. You're calling for calm across Northern Ireland in light of what we're seeing.
I think certainly we were all frightened, all taken aback by the level of savagery of what happened the night before last in East Belfast and North Belfast. It was savage, burning cars, burning houses. I think it took us all by surprise. And clearly that has to be condemned. And I think all community leaders are pulling together, civic leaders, church leaders and so on, saying that this is no way, whatever the problems are that we face, whatever the concerns are that people have, this is no way to deal with a situation. This is no way to vent the anger. Because so often when people do feel distressed about something, it's easy to say, there's the problem. If only you got rid of X community or Y community, then everything would be fine in our area. It's the scapegoating that's gone down through the centuries of finding someone to blame for our dis-ease or lack of ease or uneasiness about the situation that we live in. But this level of savagery, I think, has taken many of us by surprise. I got phone calls from friends in Italy saying we saw it on top of our national news in Italy, this madness in Belfast. Mm. So we have to really get to terms with A, what's behind it, and B, ensuring it doesn't continue.
And there'll be people who are saying that they are just expressing their disdain for what happened and for the way that immigration is working in Northern Ireland, and I suppose that the border there between, because it's believed that the man had first come into Dublin, but you're saying that this isn't the way to go about it.
I think certainly. I remember a lot of years ago, a visiting priest was in one of our areas in Derry here after trouble during the summer. And there were places where there had been petrol bomb attacks on police vehicles going through the area. And you can see those sort of burn marks across the road where the tar had melted and sort of been left lumpy. But this visiting priest says, no, what I'm seeing, I'm seeing a community slashing its arms because of its disgrace. It may be finding an unhelpful way of venting its uneasiness. And yet I think we have to take seriously that there clearly is in many loyalist areas a sense of uneasiness. And we have to find ways of dealing with that. They're being told the simple solution is get the foreigners out.
But
on the other hand, I certainly know in the north the health service couldn't continue without the visitors, without the people from abroad. We certainly couldn't function in terms of doctors, in terms of nurses, in terms of nursing assistants, all of those. We absolutely need people coming in from abroad. We can't supply all the workers ourselves, particularly in the Republic, but certainly in the north, health service as well. We need these people, so we've got to see what the source of the uneasiness is, the problem is for these loyalist communities. But reassuring that kicking foreigners out isn't going to solve any problems.
Bishop, you spoke there about the smell of the tar melt, and for a lot of people, smelling those smells again will bring them back. You know, the scent has quite a memory trigger, but it will bring a lot of people back to the times of the Troubles in Northern Ireland.
It certainly would be traumatic for many of the older generation. I mean, people like myself, I went to university in Belfast in 1968, just as the Troubles were starting, and I spent most of my life living and working in Northern Ireland since then, both in Belfast and in Derry and probably nowhere else. So yes, it does bring back memories for many people. But I suppose part of the problem for some of those who have come to live with us here is they have been fleeing similar circumstances in their own country, in Sudan, in Somalia, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Iran. They're actually fleeing people being burnt out of their communities, being victimized because of their identity, their racial identity, their religious identity, and they're trying to find something better. And suddenly they find themselves back in the same situation that they were trying to escape from. And very often those conflicts in the Middle East have been fed by Western interests who are happy to have their proxies doing the fighting and doing the killing and supplying them with arms and then keeping their own hands clean. So I think we are part of the problems in the Middle East that has driven people from conflict there to here, and the last thing they want or need coming here is to find the same thing as they tried to escape from.
I had read a piece in the paper this morning of a Sudanese woman saying we came here because we thought we'd be safe, and as she was giving that statement to the journalist, they had commented that their daughter was standing beside them in her primary school uniform.
Yeah, it certainly is very, very, very tense. And I suppose people certainly in Belfast, more than in Derry now, to be honest, Belfast is a much more divided city than Derry is. I think people would be concerned about what use or what abuse might be made of the summer to stoke other fires. And clearly you get comments from politicians and from other people saying there are forces around the world and not just around the corner who are saying it's all the fault of foreigners, all the fault of immigration. And we have it on the green side on this island as well, those who want Ireland for the Irish, detecting the fact that the Irish fled from places like the famine and troubles in relations of my own at the beginning of the setting up of Northern Ireland, and were welcomed in other countries and are able to make a contribution to other countries. And we have to recognise the realities we live in, and simply scapegoating one particular group is what Hitler did. And look at what that ended up doing. We have to find ways of recognising the realities of a modern world. Modern economy that requires labour force coming in from abroad to keep the economy going, keep the economy booming, keeping the income coming in for the government coffers. So I think we have to have adult conversations here, but there are people who are simply maliciously exploiting discontent and tear anger on the part of loyalist communities in the north here for purposes that do nothing to benefit the loyalist communities.
Bishop, there obviously is quite a large bit of divide there across the way. In terms of the what we're seeing in Derry, it's not quite to the same extent that's in Belfast, but it's not something we want to see escalate either.
It most certainly is not. What happened in Derry last night, I was talking to one of the priests over on the waterside last night and again this morning, and really was a few youths come out from a particular loyalist estate at the bottom of Church Bray there near Altagelvin, but they were quickly cleared away and nothing serious happened. the traffic wasn't seriously affected. There were other ways around it. But it's bound to be frightening for people who are living in that area or not too far away from it, because the Gallivant Hospital is right on the edge of that area. There'll be many people who come from many other countries who work in the hospital, who work very hard to keep it going, who will feel threatened and may choose to leave and leave gaps in the hospital itself. You go into any of our hospitals, north and south, and you'll find a huge amount of the work is being done by people who don't look like they came from Donegal or Derry.
Bishop Donal McKeown, thank you very much for that. We really appreciate your time this morning.
No problem. You're very welcome indeed.
Thank you. God bless. That was Bishop Donal McKeown there. If you have views on that you would like to share, please get in touch with the show. It's 08660 25000. We've also heard that there is lists doing the rounds of addresses, and that these homes are effectively are said to be, that this is what's going to be attacked next. These are going to be the targets. And we've heard from people connected to us that there's people who have come home, there's people who've had to go stay in hotels for the night. And not that it's the point, but it's not, you know, it's not immigrants, it's not all immigrants. And it's, you know, we've heard that, as the Bishop was saying there, that for people there, we know that it's people who are doctors, it's people who are living in these houses, and it's those that are left, I suppose, living in fear in a place they thought that they could come to be safe. I have some birthday requests for a very loved woman called Anne O'Brien from Rafoe. Happy birthday to my mum and granny, Anne O'Brien from Rafoe, from Angela, Greg, Ethan, Dylan and Ryan. Enjoy your special day. And we have another one in. Happy birthday to my wife, Anne O'Brien from Rafoe, from her husband, Jim. Lots of love. And by the sounds of things, you're going to have a very, very lovely day with the feet up and getting absolutely spoilt. Now, on line one, I have Councillor Micheál Nocton, Fianna Fáil from the Donegal MD. Councillor Nocton, you have concerns which have been kind of similar to ones, I suppose, that we've seen in Buncrana, and it's in relation to taxis and the lack of them.
Good morning, Donna Marie, and good morning to your listeners. Yes, Donna, I mean, you know, at our MD meeting on Tuesday in Donegal Town, I took up this issue in relation to taxis and that, and I've called on the Economic Development Department of Donegal County Council to write to the Minister highlighting the issue that we have, because at the moment the market is not working, it's not delivering for the customers. And that Donegal is a rural county, and that, and you know, up here we don't have the same infrastructure in relation to buses maybe going every 10 minutes. We don't have the trains, we don't have darts, and it's affecting the nighttime economy for people, and that, and for somebody that's in the hospitality business and working late nighttime and seeing it on the ground, that you have customers coming in using your premises, and that, and when it comes to the end of the night, I mean, you kind of throw them out because they kind of get taxis and that, and it's becoming a serious issue and that for the hospitality market, but also for rural towns and villages that mean are trying to survive and that. And you know, the Competition and Consumer Authority, you know, they did a survey themselves and they discovered that, you know, in Connacht and Ulster it was a serious issue, that 4 in 5 people had an issue with this in getting a taxi. And you know what I'm calling here, that basically is that, you know, we look at the regulations, we look at the way it's ran in other countries, because it's too difficult and the fees and everything to get involved. I'm calling on a system here.
It's kind of a double-edged sword there, because you either have people staying out and then they get stuck, and the as you said there, the premises aren't very well going to throw them out without anywhere to go. But then the flip side of that is that if they go out and either leave very early or don't go out at all.
Exactly, and we can see it now that basically people are coming out maybe for something to eat, but then going home because of the fear of not getting a taxi. And you know, for people that would have travelled to European countries or I mean even to the UK or America, we all know that basically you can go on your phone and Uber there, and you know, you put in and they can tell you where the taxi is coming from, when it pick you up. But here in Ireland, that system is not in place. And even to get in place, there's too many barriers and too many restrictions to get it set up. But we have to look at it, because, I mean, if it keeps going the way it's going to affect the likes of counties like Donegal that are dependent on rural people, and that to come out and into their premises. And, you know, we see it every weekend, and, you know, we hear it all the time. And, you know, people are saying, oh, we won't bother going out because we can't get home. And, you know, there's a huge emphasis now on drinking and driving, and people are more, you know, switched on. They don't want to go out, you know, taking that chance to have to drink, you know, to have a drink on them. So, you know, it has to be looked at. I mean, for the betterment of rural Ireland, for the county of Donegal and Connacht Ulster, I mean, this is a huge issue and something that has to be addressed as a matter of urgency.
What do you think would be the best approach here? Having more in the terms of public transport and town buses, or Councillor Jack Murray said he doesn't agree with the illegal taxi service, but trying to get your taxi licence is it's overcomplicated and putting people off.
Yes, and that nobody wants to see illegal taxi services. I mean, I'm calling for basically is something like the Uber, and that people can use their own private cars. I mean, they pay a regulation and a fee, but I mean, it's not as difficult as it is at the moment, because as we see, I mean, and you know, the Competition and Consumer Authority, they did their own service. And in Ireland, since 2008, 40% of a reduction in taxis. And that, and you look at our neighbours, the UK, since 2011, they have a 45% increase in taxis. So I mean, you know, it's just not working. The demand, I mean, is there. But I mean, we have taxis to basically facilitate the customers that are going out. So we have to look at regulation. People can use their own private cars and that, and you know, pay a fee, register, that mean, and be able to take people home.
I know that there has been concerns about Uber and Freenow and other services like that, and that the working conditions are, that it's taken away from the taxi market, but I suppose in the case that you're putting here, that's not there, so it's not you know, it's not going to harm a market that's not existent.
Correct on it. I mean, and if we look at other European countries and look at the UK and US, that mean it has increased, has basically, you know, more taxis. But I mean, the demand has helped it. I mean, has made it more vibrant. And as I say, you look at our neighbours, basically, they have an increase, and that there is a huge demand. I mean, the Competition and Consumer Authority knows that in Connacht and Ulster are the most affected problems in the country in relation to this issue. So there is a problem here. So it has to be addressed. It has to be looked at. And I think this is the only solution that, you know, if people, you know, we come back a couple of years ago, there was Hackney's, and you could operate that way. But that's even gone at the moment because the regulations and fees trying to get involved. So it has to be looked at. It has to be addressed. And I feel there is a solution there that can work for everybody. And, you know, more competition and more people involved, as the saying goes, a rising tide lifts all ships, and I think it would be betterment for everybody involved.
Okay, Councillor Micheál Nocton there, Fianna Fáil, thank you very much for your time on that. Interesting view. Should we be implementing the likes of those travelling apps in Donegal? Now, you have been having your say. You can't buy a taxi plate. There were 6 or 7 plates in Donegal town which died with the family. I have a taxi plate and I can't sell it. The only plates available now are for disabled taxi, and that's an average of €75,000 to start a taxi business. Another one, in Carndonagh, at one time there were about 20 taxis in the town, and now there's only 4, and only 2 of them work at night. The licence is the issue. Trying to pass the test is nearly impossible. I know of one young lad who failed it 5 times, and in the end he just gave up. Morning, in relation to the taxi drivers in Buncrana, fair play to them for actually trying to get their taxi sorted, because it's near impossible to get one at the weekend. I don't like the way the local press has them all over the court section as if they're criminals. Report on the real gangsters, and if this town be more in line of not the hardworking people. Now, I can see where you're coming from, that sometimes there's a thing of people should be named and shamed, but in a way, by having those in the court, or having those stories out, it was kind of highlighting the wider issue of, you know, look at the length that these people had tried to went to try and get a taxi service running, and that they're being punished for it. And it's kind of just like the point that you said, you know, it will make people think, well, is this where the energy should be going? And, you know, we've had a number of politicians speaking out since that had happened. Only this week we had an issue trying to get a taxi. It was a friend of mine, and they had booked a taxi for a time to get to an appointment, and the taxi had arrived. It was like 20 minutes late. Then they were trying to ring saying, I'm so sorry, I'm going to be late. It was very stressful. Anyway, got there. I think they were only about 5 or 10 minutes late, so it wasn't the absolute end of the world. But then afterwards, they rang another taxi just to get back home. And they were like, yeah, no problem, we'll have that with you shortly. And after half an hour, he rang back and he was like, hi, I'm just checking, like, are you using your hand, or, you know, do you want me to walk to somewhere? And they're like, oh, sorry, we meant to ring you. We actually don't have anyone. I was just picking up the phone to ring you. We don't have anyone. Sorry, you're going to have to try somebody else. And, you know, middle of the day appointments, you're having to leave work for that. It's very much not ideal. You know, and that's the issue. Whenever there is such few taxis, they're trying to keep up with demand. And a lot of people are left in effectively quite bad humour because they're trying to get where they need to go. There's no buses, there's no taxis. And if you don't have a car, you know, or you're trying to wait to get your test passed, it's presenting a whole different array of issues. Okay, I have a few comments I'd like to get to. Good morning. Why doesn't the British and Irish government offer their citizens a referendum on immigration and border control at this point to settle the tensions on the ground north and south? I can see where you're coming from on that one. Sometimes, and this mightn't go down well with just everyone, but there's times, I think, whenever there's protests or there's riots and things like this here, there is sometimes a feeling of, you know, whenever people or there's a group of people that are talking very loudly, that does not always reflect in the referendums or elections or whatever vote there may be going on. You know, there was a lot of candidates in the last round of elections who had those types of values, and from the way that things turned out, a lot of them didn't get seats in the end. Donna Marie, disturbances in the north are manufactured around immigrants. The truth is that unrest is carried out by young racist thugs against people in our communities who look different to white people. People who encourage these atrocities should be arrested and locked up. They're not wanted in our racially inclusive communities. One more here. Why slate the loyalist people and not highlight the reason for the riots? They're brought up by NGOs, and the people that are taking the country back, they'll remember who stood with them and who stood against them. Okay, we'll come back. There's more where those came from, and we'll want to make sure that we get everybody's opinions heard. But now, we were talking earlier to John Hegarty, and he was talking about, he's from a haulage company, and that they're worried that if there's two lorries on the road, that an ambulance or a fire truck won't get by the new road there just out by the hospital. But I have Donal Mandy Kelly on the line, and Donal Mandy, you have something of an update for us in relation to this.
Yeah, listen, thanks, Donna Marie. And listen, I was listening to John on your show this morning. And listen, John has outlined his concerns very well. And I suppose, to begin with, it's a lot of the same concerns that I have been highlighting from word go in relation to these active travel projects in and around Letterkenny. And listen, we had, as a council, we had bus operators on to myself and other councillors outlining the exact same issues and concerns that John has. And actually we had a meeting with them just over a week ago along with our roads executive within the council where the bus operators sat down and outlined the very same concerns and issues that they're facing in relation to coming off roundabouts, that the lanes is too narrow. They're going to have to cross over the white line onto oncoming traffic, particularly at pinch points, at the likes of the Kilmacrenan roundabout at the hospital, the Ballyrain roundabout at Letterkenny Skip Hair, and again they see the same concerns arising at the roundabout at Thomas Keyes' shop in Ballyrain as well. And you know, they're really concerned about this. They've outlined as well meetings two vehicles meeting at the same time, and the same we see there on the four-lane project, where, you know, these high articulated vehicles and buses are finding it very tight to pass one another without clipping mirrors, you know. And, you know, I have to commend the bus operators that was at the meeting that day. You know, they're very concerned. They're trying to run a business, and they're trying to run a business on time. And the main issues they're facing at the minute in relation to not just traffic congestion, but the pinch point is that their schedule is running behind time, and they have people with appointments in Dublin, Galway, etc., that's running late. And, you know, they're trying their level best to run a top-class business, which they have done. But now are facing a lot of struggles.
What can be done about that now, though? You know, like the works, it sounds very cynical to say, but the works are done, or they're nearly done.
Well, yeah, well, listen, Donna Marie, I was told numerous times that it's too late. It's never too late in my eyes. You know, there's always room for improvement. And I have called from the very outset that a full review be carried out of the active travel projects in relation to where we can minimise disruption and where we can increase road capacity. You know, and, you know, we see the Kilmacrenan Road in relation to the right turning lane that's going to be taken away. You know, that's a disaster waiting to happen. And we're not going to see the full outcome of that until then. The bus operators, when they were on the last day as well, they were that concerned that, you know, they requested as well to Michelle that they would like to see a full review of the active travel. Now, we have set another date. The executive is to go away and look into the issues and concerns that were raised on that day and come back early next month now with an update on it. So let's now look forward to that, as do the bus operators, to see where we can improve this going forward. In my eyes, I've always said it, I think active travel in certain towns is a fantastic job, but in Letterkenny, it's just not going to work. It's premature. Mm. We have a lot of our road networking that we need to get right before we sit down, and we should have started implementing, wrapping up good footpaths to put in footpaths and cycleways. I don't think it's the right time for it.
Councillor Kelly, correct me if I am wrong on this, because it could be, but I have a memory of being in the council chamber in Letterkenny whenever this was starting to be talked about, the active travel, and all these objections were put in. But this could have been a year or a year and a half ago. So how did it still happen?
That's correct, Donna Marie. And listen, as you'll be aware, I raised the same concerns that's been highlighted today at that time, that year or year and a half ago. But unfortunately, the process was, Donna Marie, that, as you know, this went to a vote and full council plenary meeting in Lifford, where councillors all over the county were able to vote on the process going forward to start construction and getting the project up and running. Now, there was a number of councillors, including myself, that voted against this from the start, but unfortunately it was overruled at the time. There was more councillors voted yes rather than no to the projects going ahead, and that's the way the process worked, unfortunately, and that's the situation we're in now. But as I say, Donna Marie, I still don't believe that it's too late. I believe there's still time to rectify this going forward, and I'll continue to push to try and ensure that is done. And when you hear the likes of John Higgerty, which I know the business very well, John travels that road and will be travelling it more than probably anybody with his articulated lorries. John provides a fantastic service up and down the country. And, you know, it's alarming when you hear the likes of John coming on there and raising the same concerns that everybody else has been raising, that this driving, I suppose, these bigger vehicles would be like buses, lorries and articulated lorries. You know, I think it's time that the council really took this on board and carried out a full review of this active travel to see how we can improve things going forward to meet all the demands and concerns that's out there.
It is. It will be alarming for some people, you know, because we hear about emergency vehicles getting stuck, but also I'm just, again, thinking about the council meetings. You know, things always come down to funding, and a lot of money's been spent to put these in, and I just, you know, thinking, will more money be spent to take them back out so soon?
Yeah, well, listen, Donna Marie, I've always had the question from the start, could this, these monies be spent elsewhere? I'm yet to get a definitive answer on that. I've asked it on numerous occasions. Recently, one individual has told me that as far as they're aware, the monies can't be spent elsewhere. But my own colleagues and councillors throughout the country, you know, they're able to tell me different. They were able to use this money in different parts of the country for road safety measures such as speed ramps, tables, signage, and crossings and stuff like that. So, you know, that's something that I feel we need in Letterkenny. We have the Letterkenny Green Connect there that's sitting on Phase 1, and I would love to see Phase 2 of that finished and delivered right up to the Port Road. And, you know, I feel as well that that's places that money could and should be spent. But it's important now going forward that we get this right. The businesses in Letterkenny are suffering. I'm getting it daily, particularly there on the Kilmacrenan stretch. There's a business at the bottom of Letterkenny as well, beside the Tin Tie. Since that active tab was complete, you know, unfortunately, I've been told that business is very, very near to closing their doors unless there's some improvements made. We have Centre at the Mountain Top there as well. You know, and they've seen a major decrease and funds coming through the door and footfall. You know, that's something we don't want to see. You know, the confidence, I think, at the minute of the businesses in and around Letterkenny, particularly around active travel projects, and the people, I think, is at an all-time low in relation to the works that's been carried out and where money's been spent by Donegal County Council. And I think the council has a lot of improvement to make to rebuild the confidence in the people of Letterkenny going forward. And I hope they can do that sooner rather than later, because we have a fantastic town here in Letterkenny. That's a regional growth centre of Donegal. And, you know, it's important that we increase the footfall, we increase the opportunity for businesses coming into the town, and that we don't send out a negative message. But at the minute, I think there's a lot of improvements need to be done for that to happen. But it's important going forward that we keep enticing people to come into our town, keep shopping, and keep the economy going. But, dear Donna Marie, when you hear the likes of John Higgerty coming on there, and your Fido O'Donnells and your Patty Geller bosses and, you know, them well-established businesses, you know, it's time the council don't get the bull by the horns here and act as quickly as possible.
Okay, Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly, thank you very much for that. What's your thoughts? We have some more in here on the illegal taxis. A taxi from Derry one night felt unsafe with the driver. She didn't know. Sorry, somebody who got a taxi one night in Derry felt unsafe with the driver. She didn't know. They preferred to get a local man known to her, or a local taxi ever known to her. It's more comfortable if you know them or they're from the area. The reason we can't get taxis in Buncrana is because they're all in Letterkenny. I'm afraid now when I go out in Donegal that it's half the issue at the moment, that if I saw a greater Carta presence on the streets, it might encourage me to go out again. Okay, sorry. They're two separate ones. So somebody's saying that they're not going out because there's not enough Garda presence and they don't feel safe going out, and then also getting a taxi. The issue is, yes, very true, standing alone and out in the streets waiting is unsafe. I have had my own experiences of night out, and they won't, I can't get a taxi if I have Liam with me. So I go out by myself, me and the girls will go try flag down a taxi, and then the guys will sort of be watching and they will come after, which is kind of a strange one. More up after this. It's Donna Marie Doherty in for Greg Hughes today. Now, we've done quite a bit of giving out on the shows we have, but we do love Donegal. We love where we're from so much. And this Saturday, the 13th of June, is I Love Inishowen Day 2026. And I'm joined by Niall McCaughan, the manager of Go Visit Inishowen. Niall, what are we looking forward to this year?
We're looking forward to just a day of celebrating Inishowen. And I suppose in some ways, people could say you can celebrate it every single day, which you could, but, you know, just the beautiful scenery and the people and the things, yes, to do, whatever. But once a year, we have a kind of a special day, just something to say to people, kind of to show their love for Inishowen anyway. And people do that in many different ways. And particularly, I suppose, we want to kind of get trending online. But that could be, for example, even putting up, like everybody's on social media at the moment, it could be putting up a photograph, or it could be doing a short video with just starting off saying, I love Inishowen because, and completing that line. And really, in some ways, just celebrating. We are in a very unique part of Ireland, in some ways, a hidden part of Ireland, and maybe a place that's less travelled than others anyway, although more people finding out about it. But we just want kind of, I suppose, a special day to celebrate that and get people to appreciate what's on their own doorstep. We, I have to say, Donna Marie, we hear from visitors all the time. They can't get over the scenery. They can't get over the empty beaches, the attractions, the accommodation, the people themselves. And in some ways, I think it's nice just to have a day to sit back and say, God, why do we, you know, what's special about this place? There are many, many reasons, and us for asking people to get involved and visitors and everybody involved in that just for one day, and that's going to be this Saturday.
And you know what? I have to say, I know I mentioned Ours to Protect earlier in the show, but it was it's a sustainability thing, and I was so overwhelmed by the amount of community groups in Inishowen that are just totally dedicated to the environment. You know, I haven't found quite a group of people that pull together as much as the people of Inishowen.
And they do, and in some ways they've had it in their own, like for years it was kind of the forgotten part. I suppose a lot of people have been in Donegal, and I suppose during the Troubles one thing or another, it wasn't as much visited. But in recent times, people are now starting to explore into it, and a lot of people often say to us, oh, I've been, you know, when we were at the Hull show recently in Balmoral and also in Dublin, people say, oh, I've been to Donegal, been to Donegal town, and I would say, well, you need to go up a bit further, because, you know, Inishowen is just a very, very special place. We talk about the Inishowen 100 and just around that 100 loop. There are lots of, you know, fantastic scenery, mountains, kind of attractions. I mean, we're lucky, even if you look in recent years, things like Wild Iron and Glendowen Craft Shop and Doe Famine Village and Alpacas and Maritime and Dunley Fort. There's just lots and lots of fantastic attractions and kind of things for different people. And then in recent years, too, Donna Marie, I mean, we have just brought out four new guides, because we have people coming in asking us about the heritage or about the beaches or arts and craft or hill walking, and all those there, I said, Inishowen ticks the boxes 100% anyway. And it's just, I said, it really is kind of a place to, it's a very magical place, and a place really to step back in time, but also really get into that. I suppose the raw scenery, particularly have up at Malin Head, the place like that, it's just absolutely stunning. And people love Inishowen for different reasons. I mean, I could ask you, why do you love Inishowen would be a question. You know, do you have a reason why you like it so much yourself?
Oh, me? Yeah, oh, you know what? Actually, I think it's just what I said. I was so blown away by it. There's no people like Inishowen people. They just always band together. And if you ever need anything, they're like, I'll know somebody who'll be able to sort that for you. And within, you know, half an hour of texting somebody, you'll have five people who'll be willing to help you out. So that's that's the theme. That's the theme for this year. I love Inishowen because
And I suppose it's kind of, I suppose this year's theme is to show your love for Inishowen. So we're saying to people, it might be Donna Marie, that people simply take for like a few seconds in a day, simply just put a wee video up saying I love Inishowen, and they finish a sentence. Or it could be simply that they take a photograph or a favourite photograph they have in the past, and if they go onto our social media, they actually will see, if they go into, for example, a Facebook page and scroll down, you'll actually see a post where they can download the toolkit. There's a logo there if people want to use it, or they just might want to do the hashtag, which is I love Inishowen Day, and just put it up on the day anyway. But I have to say, people do get involved, and it's always lovely to see the creative and fun way that people kind of put up their videos or images and all. And I think, you know, people, no matter our challenges we've had over the years, the different things with COVID bits and pieces, I think that people have been shown have simply kind of rose above it. And now we're finding that more and more tourists are coming to the northwest, into Donegal, and also into Derry, which we border on too anyway. And there's more people coming into it, and they kind of, we here in the tourist office in Wooncrammet, people are saying they just can't get over the scenery and the people, and it's just a very, very special place. Or often you hear people that have heard it, you know, hand from somebody else who's been in the show and just loved it. But I say, particularly if you live in a show or working in a show, it is a privilege to come from it or work in it. And I suppose in some ways saying to people, why not take a day to step back and celebrate that and enjoy it?
It's not just a social media initiative. There's loads of businesses are pitching in. I'm seeing in my notes here something that's tickling my fancy. It's called the Malin Head Mojito.
Yes, there's all different ones. I have to say, I wouldn't do them all, but lots of different ones at the moment are getting involved with it. And I know, for example, the alpacas in the Famine Village and all the different ones, as I mentioned earlier, are all doing something a little bit different. And so some of the videos in the past have been great, I have to say, you know. And it's interesting to see why different people like Inishowen, I mean, there's different reasons. As I said, it could be the people, or it could be beaches or scenery, or it could be even the weather, which I love the weather in Inishowen too, you know. And it's just, and I said, we were meeting last weekend, I suppose there was history made in Inishowen with a big cruise ship coming in, and I was fortunate enough with a colleague to be on it. And when I was talking to the American tourists and different ones, they were just saying they loved the weather. You know, it's a funny thing you've been commenting about in Ireland, yeah, people talk about all the time.
Well, but, we take it so for granted.
The thing that people can look, I know that too. And just also getting off and they come to, you know, we're spoiled for beaches, but we're spoiled for empty beaches too, which is a thing that, you know, we're blessed with compared to maybe parts of Ireland or further afield. And this thing, if, you know, when you're driving around, you're going over the gap of Mamore and you drive around the corner and you come to another surprise or you know, bit of scenery or whatever, it just kind of blows your mind away. And I just said, it's just something, it is just something very, very, very special. And I say to people, if you are, I mean, it's very important to show this weekend your love for it, but I would say to people, if you haven't been up in Inishowen for a while, why not take a weekend or a day just up to travel around it? Because it's amazing, even the last few years, the development of even new attractions and things to see and do, and things like the alpacas and Wild Ireland and Mufflicker. I mean, there's a lot of kind of things all around Inishowen that, whether you're on your own or with a family, to see and do anyway. And there's a lot of reasons to love it and enjoy it. I suppose people in Inishowen want other visitors to come and enjoy the great scenery and the people and the different things we have here.
Well, if you were looking for something to do, it's this Saturday. So it is. Niall McCaughan, manager of Go Visit Inishowen. Thank you very much. Well, after that, it can only mean one thing. Chris Ashmore's in studio. How are you, Chris?
Very good. Enjoying the weather.
Loving it. I know I was just saying how tourists love to see it, but I'm a local, so I'm like, oh, can the sun come back? So Chris, you are, of course, you're the presenter of Business Matters, and this week you have been finding out a bit more about the Food Coast Donegal Network, which just sounds incredible.
Yes, they've launched a new website. Now, the Food Coast Donegal initiative has been going for a number of years. So this is a new platform, brings everything together for food producers, drink manufacturers. It tells you places to go. Then a lot of those involved in this sector now have, you can get an experience going to a brewery or a distillery, getting a tour around. So this brings it all together into a website. It's member driven. There's over 100 members of Food Coast Donegal. It's a sector that's expanding rapidly. And I've been speaking to Lindsay Reynolds, who's the project facilitator, and also Seamus McDade, chair of Food Coast Donegal and managing director of that iconic football special brand. And we have a clip here from Lindsay, who's been giving some more details about what they're doing.
Absolutely. We've never really had a real home for Food Coast Donegal in a digital way. So what we did is we got some funding through the STEER programme, an EU-funded programme administered by Westbic here in Donegal. And that enabled us to build not just a website, but also an interactive map of Donegal, which showcases and outlines all of the producers and the hospitality venues, and most importantly, the connections between them. So we really wanted to show people not only what we have here in Donegal, but also where they could buy it. You know, people really, as you said earlier, there's a real push for local, and people really want to know that when they're going somewhere, who they, you know, where their food is going to come from. So the idea with this new website is that there's member profiles, and by clicking on a member profile, you'll be able to see exactly where in the county you're going to be able to buy it. And similarly, if you're going to a hotel, you'll be able to see on a map where all of their producers and all of their suppliers come from within the county.
You know, I had a first, actually. Last week I was in Dublin, and it was the first time I saw football special, A, in a can, and B, outside of the county.
Yeah, and it gives you a great sense of pride, doesn't
so
it?
Exciting. Yeah, yeah. So exciting. So it was in a little pizza shop that had loads of like craft beers and stuff, and I was like, oh, yeah, there's us.
And speaking of craft beers, in Dublin, like Kinnegar is now available in a lot of bars there. Yeah. And they spoke also in the piece that's in this week's programme about, you know, Donegal as a food destination. You get towns like Dingle and Kinsale who have developed that over the years. And another thing that's really been a bit of a trend recently is this shift away from products that are coming from all over the world to using good local produce. And then you get the taste benefit as well. Because if you get something local that's maybe come out of the ground even that day, it's so much better than something that could have been on a supermarket shelf that has been imported, and you've the whole carbon footprint and the whole journey, and the taste is just not the same. So with this is a sector that's expanding, and Food Coast Donegal is this new the website really does bring things together. It's great when you go on it. Yeah, you can click on any of the members. It brings you a link to their sites. There's Q&As and lots of frequently asked questions and lots of interesting information there.
It is. People have gotten very into their well-being and their fitness, but this is a big part of it now, you know, like how that whole farm to plate.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a sensation.
Yeah. Indeed. No, it's an area that's also seen a lot of small businesses growing, and it's great for employment as well.
You've gone from, it looks like, from one extreme to the other. I have genuinely no idea what the second piece is about.
Yes, well, I didn't know much about it either. Now, this is significant funding, the Atlantic Technology University, over $8 million in funding for what is known as the SPEAR Centre. Now, that's Semiconductor Photonics Education and Research Centre. It's going to be based here in Letterkenny, tying in with a number of other institutions. Now, we've heard of microchips and how they all help in our computers and much of our everyday lives. Now, this is dealing with photonic chips. Now, they use light photons instead of electrons to process information, and it's much faster, and this is an area that has seen a lot of growth at the moment. So this funding is going to mean that here in the Northwest we're going to see this being developed. They're going to have a number of road shows in the next few weeks in Letterkenny, Derry, Buncrana and Ballymena to bring in small and medium enterprises to tell them what it's all about. And significantly, there's 100% funding available for projects. So some companies are going to be able to come on board here and maybe see if something fits in with their business. So it's a big potential. And the project lead is Nick Timmons here in the ATU in Letterkenny. And he's been highlighting what he feels is considerable potential that this can bring to the region.
I would like to see where there's companies delivering and working and feeding into a semiconductor manufacturer, and that we're actually producing not only we're producing engineers and researchers in this area, and they're working locally in these companies, these small companies that are getting bigger and feeding into bigger companies. And when you get a cluster and a hub like that, then you attract a bigger, you know, you attract more companies, international companies into the area. So I'd like to see that we were on the cusp of something like that in 10 years, that we had traction as a hub and a knowledge center and an area of expertise and knowledge. That's ideally what we'd like to see.
This seems to be really quite groundbreaking. You know, you hear all the time about the Northwest becoming a real sort of specialist area of young talent. This seems to be that in a nutshell.
Absolutely. And, you know, this from small beginnings, this funding is going to lead to more research. There's also a number of people who've come on board through a program. They've 15 people who are going to specialize in this, and they're tying in with the Tyndall Institute down in Cork, also tying in with Seagate in the North are involved, and it's the start of something that Nick Timmons is, he's very optimistic about this. And the photonic chips, like, essentially it's faster, more energy efficient than your normal microchips using photons. So this is an area that we're going to hear a lot more about.
That's very interesting. In other business news across Donegal, we have the DLDC annual report for last year.
Yes, the Donegal Local Development Company has just launched its annual report. It's spent over $3.4 million in various programs delivering local initiatives. There was money approved under the LEADER program for 20 projects, more than 600,000. Significantly, more than 400 people supported in full part-time and self-employment through the work of the DLDC, and also involved very much in helping people to get involved in training and workshops, more than 2,000 people, in fact. So it continues to play a big role in supporting people throughout the county, and their website has the details, and you can go onto that and find out more about the annual report.
And you also have here about the Ardra Distillery, which sort of ties in with the first point that you had there with the Donegal Good Coast Network.
Yes, more success and recognition. The Ardra Distillery has secured two major international honours at two of the world's leading spirits competitions. Now, the distillery was named as the best Irish craft distillery at the Tokyo Whiskey and Spirits Competition, and its Ardra single malt cask strength won a double gold medal at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition, which is regarded as one of the industry's most prestigious awards. And the brewery was founded, or the distillery, I should say, was founded by James and Moira Doherty. And it continues to go from strength to strength.
That is absolutely incredible. That's sort of like the football special. You feel so proud to have Donegal on that platform, and you just want to see everyone do so well. Moving on to our final note, the Letterkenny Chambers President lunch is tomorrow.
It's tomorrow in the Radisson Blue Hotel in Letterkenny. The theme is Ambition, Growth and Opportunity. The keynote speaker is the Minister for Public Expenditure, Infrastructure, Public Service Reform and Digitalisation. That's a mouthful. Jack Chambers. There'll be a panel discussion chaired by Garrett Hart. And amongst those who will be there, Eilish Dardy, Managing Director of Donegal Airport, Brenda Hegarty, Head of Economic Development at Donegal County Council, and Niall Coffey, the Cluster General Manager of Harvey's Point Ballymascanlon Hotel and the Radisson Blue. So much to look forward to at that Chamber President's Lunch.
I'm sure you'll have loads of coverage on that next week.
Yes, indeed. We shall be following up from that.
Excellent. Chris, thank you so much. And just looking at the time here now, this is where I got to love yous and leave yous. Greg will be back tomorrow, hopefully with a big shiny medal. And thanks to Caroline Orr for researching and producing the show. I'll chat to you soon.